It's a great time to save big on everything for your next project at Menards. Get free estimates fast on new energy-efficient windows from Jeld-Wen. Choose from vinyl or wood windows and customize the perfect size and unique features for your home. Save big on all Jeld-Wen windows today. View our entire selection of Jeld-Wen windows on Menards.com. Plus, the weekly flyer for other great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
The reality we live in can be a very strange place. Most of the time, fact being stranger than fiction. How will we ever start to understand this reality we live in must be questioning everything. Join me and a guest as we unravel the mysteries of this reality, one topic at a time. This is Inquiries of Our Reality. Shane Jones.
Reality isn't what it seems. I'm Doc D's taking aboard a craft with a tractor beam. Is life a simulation or an astral dream? Aliens travel through black holes in different galaxies. Life is a bizarre odyssey. With a mic talking about philosophy. Well, Bigfoot is stalking campers. As a Wendigo walks through the woods of sharpened antlers. Using a Ouija board to talk to the dead like a necromancer. There's so many questions and not enough answers. So if you're interested and mysteries and abnormalities, tune in and listen to Inquiries of Our Reality. So if you're interested in mysteries and abnormalities, tune in and listen to Inquiries of Our Reality.
What is up, Inquirers, and welcome back to the expanse of deep open-minded conversation. I'm the one they call Shane, and tonight for you guys, I have somebody that I had heard about a year ago or so on the confessionals, diving into having some very similar experiences to the ones that I've had, and he also seemed to be definitely fascinated with this whole natural portal concept. So we started off everything with some of those different concepts, and it ended up getting into this really deep conversation, getting into a lot of different other stuff. I definitely think that you guys are definitely going to enjoy this episode. It kind of goes back to, again, the roots of the show, getting into the deep philosophical conversation, and a little bit of everything for everybody. So, but before we get into this fantastic episode today, we, of course, have to do news and updates and front of house. First piece of news and updates. I recently added all of the new shirt designs to the Open Minds Media merch store, and I actually restructured the store a bit so there's not so many just random items. Everything's a little bit neater and cleaner. So if you guys want to go and check out the new shirts that I threw up there, I tried to print in different colors than just black this time to try to mix it up. So my Reptilians for America shirt, that one's printed on a blue shirt with a red, white, and blue, so it's very patriotic looking. My Sasquatch Researcher shirt I did on a green shirt, so it's again mixing it up a little bit. And then I of course have the new Dogman shirt that came out, and I also have the Respect the Forest buff Sasquatch shirt. So I definitely think you guys will really enjoy the new designs. If you guys aren't following on Instagram and haven't seen, there is a link down in the show description going directly to the merch store, so you guys can check those out. And I do have a lot of other new stuff that I will be uploading soon, making sure that I keep working as far as the merch store goes, and not just, again, creating podcast designs, but all of these other different cryptid conspiracy type designs. So if you're into all that kind of stuff, just expect there's going to be a lot more going on with the merch store as far as that stuff goes. And, you know, check up every once in a while and see what new designs I might have up. Or, again, follow on Instagram to stay up to date on any new designs that I might drop. And if you guys want to pick one up for yourself, you guys can still use that code Cryptid10 for 10% off at checkout. And of course, that will work with all of the new designs too. And moving into front of house. If you might be interested in reporting an encounter, you guys can do that to OMMEncounterReports@outlook.com. And it doesn't matter how big, doesn't matter how small, I absolutely would love to hear about them. And either one, I can read them on the show if you guys want to send it in as a typed out message, or you guys can always record a voice message and you guys can email it to me and I can play that in the beginning of the show. Or if you don't want any of it talked about whatsoever, you just want somebody to talk about your experiences with, I'm always here for that too. And if you are reasonably close to me, of course, I might even be able to come out and investigate it. But none of that will happen unless you report those encounters to OMMEncounterReports@outlook.com or go to the link tree and there is a specific submission form for that. Or you guys can even send me messages on Instagram or Facebook. Instagram I am more active on, but either is definitely a viable option. And if you guys enjoy this show, I know I've said it a million times, but don't forget to go and check out my other show, Bizarre Encounters, that I do with my awesome co-host, Oren, deep diving into a bunch of different topics, a lot of the same stuff we talk about on this show, but from our perspective and our research. And you guys can also check out our YouTube/Patreon show, Bizarre Inquiries, which the format for that will be changing up pretty soon here. So if anybody is interested in submitting some questions for that, or possibly even a video clip that we can discuss, I'm going to try to make it a little bit more video friendly. So we're going to have a little bit of a difference as far as that goes. We're going to bring in our own video clips and stuff and just try to make that our catch-all fun show for everybody to go and check out. And if you guys want to support the show, you guys can go and join the OMM Patreon. Over there, there are three tiers, a $1 tier, $3 tier, and a $5 tier, all of which come with 7-day free trials, of course, to see if you guys like them. And there is also the sponsorship tier if you guys are interested in sponsoring the show and getting ads put on the show. And of course, I already mentioned the merch store in the beginning, but if you guys want to go and check that out, of course, that link for that is down in the show description, and there's going to be a lot of awesome expansion as far as that goes, like I mentioned. And the third way you guys can support the show, and one of the best ways of supporting the show, is through leaving a review on iTunes or Spotify. I see all the numbers go up on Spotify, trying to boost it up on iTunes, so if you guys don't mind typing out a review so that I can read on the show and give you a big shout out, I would more than appreciate it. And if you guys want to stay up to date on the show and on the merch store and on Open Minds Media, you guys can go and follow that stuff on Instagram, Facebook, Discord, YouTube, and TikTok. Instagram, like I mentioned earlier, is the one that I'm the most active on, but any of those are definitely an awesome way to keep up to date on the show. And every single thing that I mention is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, let's get into the show. Please welcome to the show, John from 21CD Podcast. How's it going today, man?
It's going awesome. How are you?
Not too bad, man. Absolute pleasure to finally get you on the show after we tried this roughly about a year ago, and you said you had a messed up schedule and stuff at the time, but man, I'm one of those people that thinks that shows always happen when they're supposed to, so man, maybe we'll get into something today that wouldn't have happened if we would have tried to schedule this earlier.
That's true. It's true. You never know.
But a good spot to always start everything off at, for anybody that might not be familiar with who you are, what you do, why don't you let them know a little bit about you, a little bit about yourself, and a little bit about your podcast.
Yeah, I'm John. I'm from the 21CD Podcast. That's my show on the 21CD Podcast. We kind of, it stands for 21st Century Dystopian. So we try to bring all of these sightings and unexplained phenomena that are that everybody's experiencing in the world and sort of tie them all into the big picture of this, you know, modern dystopian nightmare that we all live in. So to be more specific on that, it's like, you know, how do alien sightings impact how religion, or how does dog man impact politics, or how big of a threat actually is AI? And, you know, the NPC is a big thing of mine. The dead internet theory is my next show. So like, we kind of do all sorts of techie stuff with a little bit of conspiracy and tie everything into the big picture over at 21CD.
Man, all the good stuff. That's usually, I kind of cover a wide array of stuff on my show too, but I always like getting into the stuff that you can kind of theorize about and kind of get into stuff that's kind of philosophical as far as like where technology and everything's going. So, I mean, just off of what you do your show about and what I do mine about, I feel like we might get into some awesome deep conversations today, man.
I hope so.
But one spot that I also really like to start on, and I think it was the original reason that I had messaged you back when I heard you actually on the confessionals, you'd mentioned that you'd had an encounter with something that's also something that I've had an encounter with. So if you want to kind of start off with that story, or if you want to start off with where all your experiences started in the first place, kind of however you want to lead it, man, then we'll get into everything off of that.
Yeah, sure. So I don't know. It's hard to actually pinpoint when I had my first sighting, because, you know, sometimes I spend a lot of time in the woods. I'm always out in the woods, and I wasn't always a believer in this kind of stuff. So when I wasn't a believer, which was probably, you know, I would say 5 years ago is when I really started diving into this stuff deeply. But prior to that, I just never really saw anything in the woods that truly shocked me. I had been told that as a kid, my dad would take me camping and stuff, and he would say that I would see things and whatnot. But my first real experience, I think, would be my, what I call a Wendigo experience. And I call it that because of where I live. So without giving too much away, I do live pretty far north in Wisconsin. And we've got a lot of Wendigo history here. So we kind of just, and when we did Tony Merkel's show, you know, the episode is Wendigo Woods. But I could see it just as easily being some kind of skinwalker that I had and that I had seen. And that probably took place about, I want to say 3-ish years ago now, but my timeline does get a little fuzzy sometimes.
Man, yeah. I feel like we have a lot in common with our experiences. I'm in Michigan, so I'm not too far off from you, just a heads up too, as far as me having my encounter. But I think the main reason I messaged you is because of the way you described this thing. So I think you and I had a lot more of a similar experience than we think. So I guess, not to cut in, but man, I'll let you kind of get into it a bit more. I just think there's a lot of conversation to come off of this, man.
Yeah, and interrupt me whenever you want, because this story could get long. But so basically the story was, I'm an amateur filmmaker in my free time. And so me and some buddies, I had written this film. It was a sci-fi film that we were going to film out on my parents' land. My parents own some land on the Fox River out here. And so I had assembled a group of three guys and myself, and we were going to go and we were going to do some filming. And we had been filming all day, and we were getting tired, and, you know, as darkness fell, we ended up deciding that we were going to hunker down in this shelter that we had made for the show, the movie that I was filming. And the structure, it was like we had built it ourselves. It was this giant sort of wooden shelter made of logs and sticks. And there was a huge oak tree that had fallen that we propped all these up on so that we could get inside. And it was big enough that we could all be in there and sit around a fire. And so that's exactly what we were doing. And we were just hanging out for a while and talking. And these woods, I'm not sure why. And many people, almost everybody who's ever been in this forest on my parents' land has said the same thing. They're just so dark. Like the forest is, it's dark there, and it doesn't seem like it should be, because there's not that many trees that stop the light from coming in. There are plenty of trees, but they're not the type that you would expect to like cancel out all light. But that's just sort of a characteristic of this forest. And so we couldn't see outside the shelter. We could, you know, we were sitting inside, but outside it was just pitch black. And at one point, me and my brother, we went out to get some fresh air, and we were just sort of standing right outside the shelter. So behind us would be the shelter, and it's kind of, since there's a campfire in there, it kind of illuminates us a little bit from the back, and sort of like a silhouette, you could say. And this is important because we were having a hard time seeing out into the forest, but whatever was out in the forest would have no problem seeing us. And that's sort of when I was looking off into the distance, and I noticed some kind of, I first heard a sound that sounded like leaves or sticks cracking. And then I noticed some eyes, and the eyes are the thing that really sort of horrified me, I guess. And that's sort of when I knew that I was seeing something actually legit. I wasn't just experiencing a sound that could be a raccoon rummaging in the undergrowth or something like that. And the eyes were very high up. That was the biggest thing. Like they were probably at least 6 or 7 feet in the air. And they were large and round. I couldn't see the pupils, and they weren't illuminating themselves. One of the questions I get is like, were the eyes illuminated? Because I guess a lot of people think like Dogman and Wendigo and all those sort of creatures, they have eyes that project their own light. but I wasn't really getting the sense from these eyes. It was clearly a reflection from our fire. And I was watching it, and we were watching these eyes, and, you know, they weren't moving at all. They were just simply watching me and my brother. So I was telling him, I was like, do you see that? And he was looking off, and he was like, I do see it. And we were telling the boys, we're like, guys, come out here and see if you can see this. And they came out, and sure enough, they could see it too. And so, not knowing what this thing was, we, you know, we're too far south, I think, for bears, for any substantial threat of bears. And we do have a ton of coyote, but obviously these eyes are way high up in the trees. Our first thought was maybe it's a deer, like just a gigantic deer. We do have a game trail that runs through there and everything. And we were just thinking this has to be some kind of deer. But that's when everything kind of, we got away from the deer idea when we started throwing sticks at it, because we were getting very nervous about the fact that it wasn't moving. It was just standing there staring at us from a distance. And so we started throwing sticks at it. We started just picking up logs, and we were just chucking them into the distance, trying to hit this thing or at least scare it off. And as we did that, it dropped, the eyes dropped into the prone position on the ground. So it would be as if you were sort of in the prone, like chest to the ground, but your face was 100% parallel with your body. So you were, the eyes were still looking at us, but they were inches from the ground at this point. And there was no sound when it dropped. It just, they just plummeted to the ground in a second, and they continued to stare at us. And that's when we started getting really freaked out, because it was clearly not going to move from its position, no matter what we did. So we started going back into the woods back into the shelter and trying to see if there was any sort of weapons that we could have. We had our flashlights out, which were literally just lights on our phone, because we didn't bring any real flashlights. So we just had the lights on our phone, and we were trying to see. We couldn't get any true visual on the thing. And that's why, you know, like, this story is super open for interpretation, in my opinion, still, because we didn't see a body. You know, we felt an aura, and we saw these giant eyes. They had to be at least a quarter in size, at the distance that they were. So, I mean, they could have been even bigger than that. You know what I mean? And the hardest part about the story was the fact that it wasn't coming any closer. And we went down into the woods a little bit. I was like, it's got to be some kind of creature that I could scare off. Like, this can't be a predator. But I also was reminded that predators, especially in nature, usually have front-facing eyes. So I was cautious as I sort of moved closer, but I wanted to really get a good shot at hitting this thing. So I went down into the dark, and I was sort of just outside of the campfire light. And the way that our shelter is positioned is it's on the side of a hill. And the hill is completely forested. At the top of the hill is a field. And if you run in parallel, like on the tree line, you'll get to my parents' house eventually. And so we were sort of in the side of the hill. That's where this tree had fallen, and that's where we had built this structure. And if you continued away from the structure, you could get sort of down the hill, and then it would level out for a little while of forest, and then it would go further down a hill to the river. And so I went down away from the shelter, down to where the landscape sort of leveled out a little bit. I got a big old log, and I just chucked it at it. The boys are up the hill. One of them's got a shovel that he's sort of smacking on the tree. My buddy Andy, he's yelling, and he's banging a stick on this log. And my brother AJ, he's yelling as well. And just trying to get this thing to move. But it doesn't move. And when I throw this final log, and now I'm down in the sticks, the eyes go dark. And it's like, it's almost as if the eyes just closed. And I turn around, getting ready to come back up the hill. And at this point, I can't see the eyes, because I'm assuming it's my perspective where I am. Now I'm lower in the landscape. I'm not up as high as the other guys. And they start telling me that the eyes are right in front of me. And I'm not exactly sure what to do about it. So for a moment, I'm freezing. And I'm kind of like getting ready to panic, which is exactly what I ended up doing. Because I could hear my brother, as I turned around, I could hear him say to me, "Dude, it's right behind you." And so I sprint up the hill. Everybody who's outside of the shelter at this point sprints into the shelter. They run into the shelter. We're gathering all the camera gear. We're getting ready to flee. And we do this in a fraction of a second. And then we all run up the hill. We sort of scatter along the hillside because we're panicked and we're acting like fools because we're scared. And we get to the top of the hill and we go along our way. And that's sort of the end of the sighting itself. And there's a lot of mini details that go into the whole story. And, you know, this story could be told over the course of several hours. But the sighting itself was, in my opinion, not the creepiest thing. The creepiest thing was what happened in the days that followed the sighting, because we have a lot of, as you know, as a Michiganite, is that what they call you up there?
Michigander.
So as a Michigander, you know, we have a lot of Native American legend and lore in this part of the country, as most of the country does. But up here, it seems particularly volatile a lot of the times. And so there's an Indian burial mound, I believe. I'm in the process of investigating it myself. I have to get some kind of permission, but I'm already metal detecting it and trying to figure out if there's anything in it. Probably about a mile from here where I'm at right now. And the woods are about half a mile from where I'm at right now, where I had this sighting. And, you know, the Fox River is notorious for the stories that it tells. So I already believe that there's some sort of shapeshifter, skinwalker, could be a Wendigo type being that is in this area.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. And we are back. So let's hop right in.
What happened after is we went into the house, and my parents have a basement door, and that they have a finished basement. So you walk out that door and you're immediately standing in the woods. So when we go in that door, we make sure we lock it every time because it's facing the woods and it's scary. And the whole backside of the house is windows. So yeah, it's kind of scary at night. And, you know, we go to bed, we talk, we do what we have to do, and then we go to bed. And the next day, my dad, he asks me, you know, like, "Did you guys lock the door last night when you came in?" And I might be getting a couple of the timeline details are kind of fuzzy for me at this point. But we're like, "Yeah, of course, whatever." And he says, "You know, never go in that door again. Like, never use that door again." And we're just like, okay, you know, we've been using this door for years. Like, we've literally never been told to never use that door. This is actually usually the door that he preferred us to use so that we didn't wake him and my mom up at night when, you know, we came home from a night of shenanigans or whatever. And we were like, okay, why? Like, that's weird. And he said that he had found the door completely open on its hinges. And it wasn't that evening. It was a different time that he had found the door open on its hinges. And so we inquired, like, you know, okay, like, do you think it was us? And he said, I don't think it was you, but I don't know for sure. He said he came down late in the night and he found the door wide open on its hinges. And me and my brothers, my friends, we weren't living there at the time, so it couldn't have been us anyway. And my little brother, who did live there, he's deathly afraid of being in the woods by himself, so it couldn't possibly have been him either. But he had said that over the course of the past couple weeks, he had been seeing beings, something, some kind of shadow through his window, and it would walk by his window at night. And he didn't know what that was. And keep in mind, we haven't told either my brother, my youngest brother, Benjamin, or my dad about the Wendigo or the sighting that we had. We hadn't even, it was early in the morning, so we haven't even had that discussion yet. And after that, after my youngest brother Benjamin was like, you know, I do see things once in a while in front of the window, in front of my window, and it's just, it looks like a giant shadowy figure that just sort of walks by the window once in a while. And, you know, I never knew what it was, he said. So we tell them our story and we're like, okay, well, that's pretty crazy that you're telling us that now, because we're pretty sure we saw something last night. And that's all creepy and stuff. But then my mom comes in to the kitchen and she's kind of like, what are you guys talking about? And my mom doesn't talk about this kind of stuff. Like, she's a very good, nice, wholesome, like positive vibes only type woman. She does not talk about conspiracy. She does not talk about monsters. She has no interest in that kind of stuff. And she said, you know, what are you guys talking about? Like, this sounds like scary stuff that you guys don't need to be telling Benjamin about and stuff like that. And my dad said something like, you know, like, there might be something in the woods is what the boys are saying. And my mom was like back out there. And he was like, I mean, yeah. And she said, that's pretty funny because I just got a phone call the other day from my friend. And she said that she was praying and she felt like inclined that she needed to tell my mom to be careful of the situation in the backyard. That's what she said. She said that she was praying and she felt like God had a message for my family, which was be careful of the situation in the backyard. And that's verbatim what she said. And considering the backyard is the forest, we all thought that was pretty creepy. So that kind of drove home that this was sort of a spiritual thing in my mind. That was pretty much the last straw that made me really believe that we had actually had some sort of real sighting. And we did follow up a year later. I went back to those woods and I did have another similar situation. It wasn't as bad, but I didn't see any eyes this time, but I could definitely hear just things cracking in the night as I tried to camp out there. I ended up not staying. I went back up. My dog would freak out all night long whenever she was in there trying to sleep in the tent with me. That's something that she doesn't typically do. And then when I would let her out, she wouldn't wander away from the tent at all. So, I mean, you can be the judge yourself. You know, it's like I said on the confessionals, like, I don't know what I saw. I don't know what it was. But the next day when we went out there, exactly where we saw the eyes, there was a series of X's in the trees. And they were branches, like large branches that had been sort of placed in two X formations, one sort of slightly above and to the left of the other, just fashioned into the trees in ways that were impossible for natural branch fall to make happen. So I've got pictures of all that kind of stuff, and it's pretty wild. So, you know, it could be a Wendigo, could be something else. I'm not exactly sure, but that's for the listener to decide, really, and for me to figure out.
I mean, as far as the X's go, I almost wonder if it was something that was intended to keep something in, and maybe somebody broke that seal, and that's when whatever this thing was came out and started messing around, because obviously it doesn't seem like you guys had a problem growing up, and it wasn't until relatively recently. And when it comes to creatures and things like this, I feel like if it is something that's linked to the Native American side of things, they kind of stay to one particular area. It's not like it's something that migrated into the area. Like, I'm almost curious if somebody might have broken some kind of a seal with those cross sticks or something out in the woods, if it was something that's been there for maybe a couple hundred years.
Right. And, you know, I don't know how you see portals. Portals are one of my big topics. Actually, yeah. I invented this thing called the portal cannon, and it's basically this machine that fires sound waves in a specific direction, very high powered sound waves in a specific direction. I didn't invent the theory of that. Like, you know, I'm a veteran, and they used it in the PSYOPs and all that kind of stuff too, just emitting sound at high frequencies at very loud volumes can really do some damage. And but I believe that it can also open portals. And when these sound waves collide. And so I made two of these things to sort of try to force portal activity. And I don't know if I did or not. But one of the things that I also believe is that portals can be naturally occurring in our environment, in the most random of places, just depending on, you know, where the veil is thinnest or however you want to describe it. And so I believe that personally, that little area, somewhere in that area, is some sort of maybe a dimensional rift or something. That's kind of like what I'm going on. And I believe this whole town that I live in is kind of like that. It's just this sleepy little town of 3,000 people. And there's just a lot of really strange stuff that goes on around here. And so I don't think it's just the land specifically. I think it's this whole area. And, you know, I've also heard people say, you know, are you sure you didn't see a Sasquatch? Because Sasquatch is said to also use giant X's and trees and lean logs on stuff to mark his territory or whatever the case may be. And, you know, that's an equally plausible option, in my opinion, because I do think that Sasquatch is probably predatorial.
I got a couple different things I want to dive into off that. First one, before we get too far away from the storm, we start getting into portals. Was there anybody that was there that first night that said that they may have gotten eyes on it or seen like a shape of anything or anything at all? Like any kind of visual? Yeah.
Nobody saw a shape. Nobody saw the shape. They all saw the eyes and we heard the footfalls. The footfalls were very two-legged, heavy. So that was another thing that immediately distinguished this as something bigger than like a raccoon and probably heavier than like a deer, just because of the way that it sounded when it was sort of walking. Because we heard while it was back there, we heard some rustling before we saw the eyes. And that's one of the things like when we were out getting a breather that we sort of tapped into before we saw the eyes. We just heard the rustling, but didn't think anything of it because it was like probably a raccoon or probably a fox or something like that. But as it was going, it was clearly bipedal and heavy. But as for the body shot, nobody really saw one.
And another question too, and then I'll kind of share some of my commonalities with my experience. Do you remember like what time of year it was?
This would have been, I want to say September-ish.
So starting to get a little bit colder out?
Yeah, it's like not freezing cold, but it's definitely cold. It's chilly.
So with my experience, and I know that the listeners probably heard me tell this like a million times, but when I had my experience, it was down in these tunnels that was underneath an abandoned psychiatric hospital that had a bunch of woods and everything behind it. And just like you had mentioned, this whole area just has a lot of Native American lore and stuff to it. And when I went down and saw this thing, there was a disembodied voice to my right side that told me to run. And then when I looked forward, I saw this thing standing up from behind this like hospital cart. And it was like this tall, lanky, decaying, flesh-colored looking being with like this greasy hair on the top of its head and stuff. And it was not shaped like a normal person. It was taller than a normal person. It was like stretched out. It had this decaying skin color. But at least with my experiences and the stuff with your experiences, I know most people want to describe the Wendigo with the whole like deer headed idea. And I've dived into that a bunch of times. And that was just something that came with like white settlers retelling the story and adding their kind of pagan demonistic views on it. Just like, you know, calling a certain holy grounds for the natives, like devil's this, devil's that. Right. So the idea of what it actually looks like is completely not what people think it is. And people talk about the rake and the pale crawler, and that's somewhat of a new phenomenon, but I think it's actually something that kind of got misconstrued, where the Wendigo image that we have now isn't actually a Wendigo, and that's why people don't see those kind of sightings as often. But what people are describing as a pale crawler or a rake is actually what the Native Americans were describing as the Wendigos. And if you look in it from that connotation, it seems to fit a lot more as far as like being out at certain times of year, because usually like the legend says that you're not safe from the first snowfall to the last snowfall. So if it's that colder time of year, that's typically when these things come out, according to legend. So that's also why I asked you the time of year, and you mentioned it was night, so assumably it's even colder then. And when I had my experience, it was down in these cold tunnels that were probably like 20, 30 degrees cooler than up on the surface. So yeah, I think that there's a lot of things that people are just misidentifying. But if you start looking at these common tropes between them, then they seem to fit this idea. And this is kind of where it's, we can kind of connect stuff into portals too. I've dug into a lot of the underground stuff because it's always absolutely fascinated me. And looking at the descriptions of the Wendigo, it kind of fits the idea of what people see as these like underground type beings, which could be maybe why you only see them at certain times of years, because maybe that's when these like natural portals and stuff like that are active. But diving into like the natural portal theory, one theory that I've kind of presented, and it seems to stay true for a lot of different areas I look into, is that there's usually some type of caverns or caves that are created from some type of volcano that's happened at some point that causes magnetic rocks. And there's usually some type of like battery type of deposit, like such as quartz, for example. And when you start combining those things, it seems like there's a lot of weird high strangeness that happens in those areas. And one thing that I've been kind of curious about is if it's a matter of connecting certain things to make it open, where if there's seismic activity, for example, or like a humming or stuff like that, that it will create, it will open up the portal that's within that magnetic area, because you're creating vibration within that area. And then it's basically essentially opening like a rift, which seems like it's definitely possible that even if it's slightly underground, if there is some type of earthquake type activity, it might open up these portals at certain times, and things might get come through and things might end up coming back through, which is what could potentially happen with a lot of these missing 411 cases that also, again, tend to be in regions that have a lot of these common buildups as far as some type of battery energy storing rock and then some type of magnetic rock that's generally caused from volcanic activity that ends up creating these like circular caverns.
So you're very much on the all natural sort of method of portals and stuff. You're not really into the whole spiritual thing, huh?
Well, I mean, I kind of go back and forth, but that's at least one of those common things that I've kind of connected, because I definitely dive into like the spiritual side of stuff too. But I definitely think that there has to be some type of connection that causes these things to happen. And when you kind of get into that stuff, you kind of look at it more from a semi-scientific, but still with that spiritual aspect, because, you know, portals are definitely seeming to be more of like a spiritual thing, and people are kind of dragging into more of like a sciencey thing. But I definitely think that there's these things that have to line up in order for a portal to open. And even if you're looking at that from a spiritual side, I mean, you dive into all these like different rituals and stuff, and it has to be at certain moon phases, certain this, certain that. So it's still all about these commonalities and timing that create these events to happen.
Yeah. I've gone back and forth on how I think it happens, but one thing that I can't stop thinking about is the idea that perhaps these creatures are actually just able to do it themselves. And that's, you know, that can be taken from and taken and run with both secularly and, you know, according to the idea that there's some divine creator, because I think it's a trait of various creatures, like types of creatures. I think that they are just able to come and go at will, without, sort of like you and me breathe. You know, we don't know if a Wendigo has lungs. We don't know. We don't know what it has. You know, we don't know what it is at all. So I think that personally, one of the traits of these types of creatures is their ability to just come and go as they please. And sometimes they get stuck here. Sometimes they die here. And you know, once in a while, there's a lot of tales about how we slip through, and yeah, that's where your missing 411 could potentially be explained a little bit.
See, I think it's a two-sided thing, because at least when I had my Wendigo experience, I definitely agree with, I think certain things had the ability to go back and forth, because when I saw the thing down in the basement, it was definitely physical. And then as we were leaving, I was with my girlfriend and one of her friends, and my girlfriend was taking pictures as we were running away. And she ended up catching the shape of this thing, but I didn't explain to her what happened and why I started running until after we got outside and stuff. But so she was taking pictures and she got this exact shape of this thing, but it was translucent and see-through, which definitely means that there's two sides of this thing, that it has like a physical ability and it also has a spiritual ability. So I definitely think that there's certain creatures that can do that, but then there's other creatures that don't have that natural, so to speak, ability to do it, and they have to use some type of technology to do it, which is where I kind of connect some of this in with some of the UFO stuff, that people say that when you know, they're really, really close to a UFO. They hear like a certain pitch and frequency and humming and stuff like that. I think that certain beings need some type of device to get through it, because there's two means. There's a spiritual means of connecting through this stuff, and then there's a literal science means of getting through this stuff. And it seems like a lot of the UFO stuff, they talk about how they go into caverns, they fly into volcanoes, which is where my connection is with the volcanic rock and everything. And I think that if these things have the ability to get into these certain areas, they can fly through those caverns that are created and produce their own like humming pitch frequency. And then they can also open the portals themselves by scientific means.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
So the portal stuff, man, I want to get into what you were doing exactly with it, with this gun that you were mentioning that you'd created. Like what was the reasoning behind doing that? Was the intention that you were trying to run experiments where you're trying to see if a portal would open yourself, or was there just some other means of creating this gun? And that just happens to be one of the things you can do with it.
So no, I designed it for, the purpose of, so basically I'll just tell the story. Me and the Tony Merkel squad, we went out to this cave, and he's probably going to release a movie about it at some point, but like so I don't want to steal too much of his thunder, but like we went out here because we had gotten wind. He had a connection, of this cave that was notorious for time shifting, and people would go in there, and they would claim that they would experience some type of time shift or see something unexplainable. Dogman was mentioned a few times, and right next to it was this pit of water, this pool of water that was so deep that they hadn't even found the bottom of it. And this thing was just like out in the woods in Kentucky, I believe. Might've been Tennessee. I don't really remember. It all kind of blends together down there. But, so we went there with the purpose of me taking these inventions, these things, and putting them in this giant cave. It was a huge cave. I couldn't believe it. And we were just going to blast these cannons all night long, at various positions, hoping to, essentially turn the cave into a portal. And some very strange results. I'm not going to get too much into the results because it's not really my story to tell, but it will be coming out soon. But essentially, that was the mission. Let's create a portal, or let's cause so much turmoil in the air that something else creates a portal. And we caused some stuff to happen, and some stuff definitely happened. I mean, we were experiencing alien, what we thought were UFOs, things flying erratically in the sky. There was a tree that fell down, like a huge tree fell down right outside the cave. That was very bizarre. Like, I'm talking massive tree. And we also experienced this phenomenon where we could hear voices coming from a portion of the cave that there was no possible way that there were humans. And it sounded like us talking like around a dinner table or something is the best way that we could describe it. It was like we were hearing a family having dinner at a dinner table. And if you were just a fly on the wall listening to them, it was coming from this portion of the cave where there was nowhere for anybody to be, nowhere for anybody to hide. It was just a small tunnel that opened up off the end and went outside and into the woods. And right there, we could literally hear human voices chatting, and we couldn't make out the words. It was kind of muffled. It's like when you listen to, it sounded like muffled words. And so that was the strangest thing, but that's why we created the portal cannons, and that was the purpose of them. And I would say it was effective, but it would be interesting to try that on a much greater scale. So I'm hoping for, another chance to give it a shot.
Man, it seems like the commonality that everybody's diving into as far as portals seems to go caves. And it seems like there's a lot of weird creature sightings that end up coming out of caves. And there's like such a weird long plethora of it. And you got Sasquatch that disappear into caves. You got all of these like cavern underground looking creatures that disappear into these caves. There's reptilian sightings that disappear into these caves. Like, I'm kind of curious if, I mean, even like I said, I mentioned even the UFO stuff and aliens and stuff like that seen from inside of these caves. You know, I feel like there's definitely the idea of like the thinning of the veil that could be going into other realities that exist on top of other realities. But on the other side of stuff, I feel like these portals, maybe they connect to other realities, but it seems like they, to me at least, almost kind of seem like they'd be wormholes where they might be connecting points that are within the same reality, just far off points. And the whole idea of like the thinning of the veil is more of the interdimensional concept rather than like the wormhole kind of concept.
So do you think like maybe portals like that, according to that idea, that they might not know where they come out?
I mean, I feel like you can definitely figure out the idea of where they might potentially come out to if they are some type of like natural portal. But also diving into kind of my theory that I was mentioning before, I'm kind of curious if you play a certain pitch or a certain frequency, maybe that might pick the point of where they open up at, where if you play a higher frequency, it'll open up to like a higher location, higher dimension, whatever way you want to look at it. Or if you're playing like a lower frequency, it might open up to a totally different place. And I've kind of connected this in with even some of the Bermuda Triangle stuff, that all the planes and different boats that disappear, they all give off these high pitch, like, or not high pitch, but very low pitch, like humming noises and frequency noises and buzzing noises. So I'm kind of curious if maybe that location with that being on top of it is definitely a factor of opening up these portals. And again, maybe even picking where the destination is on the other side.
100%. And, you know, to that point, when you mentioned the Bermuda Triangle, and, you know, we've got one in the Lake Michigan, too, the Lake Michigan Triangle. Those people who go missing, they're able to get off last calls and whatnot. And they always talk about, again, like you said, some sort of weird magnetic anomaly where none of their devices are working effectively. Their compasses are spinning, stuff that is usually indicative of, you know, a high level of magnetism. So, you know, possibly, yeah, I think, but I think there's multiple different types of portals too. I'm a little bit obsessed with portals. So like I actually go looking for them, and sometimes I might find something that I think is, I try to stay as level-headed as possible. You know, I shouldn't say this as a conspiracy theorist and as a podcaster in this space, but not everything is something. So I am not the person who's going to go and have some sort of sighting and just be like, this is absolutely what it is. But I can say this is something I can't explain. And I've experienced, in my opinion, two different types of portals. One is one that is completely uncontrollable. And it is this sort of this area, this massive area. It could be miles long. And it is just a completely uncontrolled area. And there's at any time what I call the dimensional bleed. And that's where two dimensions are actually colliding and becoming one for a brief second. And in that space, in that brief second, in that brief little area where they connect and become one, that's the portal. And if you happen to be there, then you get to experience both sides simultaneously. And I believe that that is one type. And then I believe there's the much more controlled type, like we discussed, that's creature based. And, you know, I believe Mothman is that way. I think Mothman is technology. I don't think it's a cryptid. I think that it is a suit. I think Mothman's a suit. And he has very pointed dimensional abilities as well. So, you know, I think the Bermuda Triangle is a massive point of dimensional bleed where two dimensions sort of cross, and it might be one above the other because some people believe it's like this, or it might be like this, you know, who knows?
I mean, if you're looking at it from that point, it definitely makes sense with the whole like time slip phenomenon, because it seems like there's two points to it where either one will end up correcting itself or something will be on the other side. And then there's not necessarily any coming back, which seems to be a lot with like, again, the missing 411 cases. But I'm almost kind of curious if when people will like walk through a time slip and then end up correcting itself and coming back, if it's a matter of the timeline naturally wants to correct itself and pull you onto the side that you're naturally supposed to be on, or if it's a matter of, say, that they walk through the bleeding point, and once they've walked past through the bleeding point, they didn't necessarily shift to one side or the other, so they didn't really get pulled into either. They kind of just skimmed past both of them at the same time. And I'm kind of curious if on both sides of that, if it kind of gets into the whole paranormal concept where, you know, if, say, somebody was on both sides of that, they would have potentially saw that person that was walking through both slips as some type of like apparition ghostly figure, or if it was one way or more towards the other side would see the one as like the ghostly type figure, but just different ways, different weird ways to think about it. But yeah, I definitely think that there could potentially be that mix with the paranormal where a lot of what people are experiencing might just be these locations where weird things are happening. And if you're going through a time slip, time isn't necessarily linear. So when people are having these apparition sightings, it may be somebody that walked through that rift spot 50 years ago or 50 years in the future, because that spot is just staying in a liminal space where it's not really comprehending with any timeline. It's just when stuff comes through all different dimensions possibly.
Right. I mean, time is a weird thing, man, because it's almost impossible for us to think at all. Like it's almost hard at all. How do I say this? It's hard to imagine time not existing, but we invented time. So it's kind of like, it's like we brainwashed ourselves by inventing time because we don't actually know anything. We don't know how the universe works. We don't know how anything works, really. If you actually look at the science that we know, everything's a theory. Nothing is really concrete. And even if you want to take the secular view of like the evolutionary theory and all that kind of stuff, a lot of it doesn't line up. Just like a lot of the stuff that we talk about in this space where it's like spirits and you know, all that kind of stuff, that stuff doesn't line up either because it doesn't make sense with a lot of the science. So it's really hard to know, you know, if time even exists at all, in my opinion. And that's, I realize that's a very radical statement, but we might be completely off with how time even works, with how the passage of, you know, present to future actually impacts the world around us. We have no idea. So if something is walking in the gray area and you happen to also enter the gray area, yeah, it might just be a place where time doesn't really exist. I don't know.
Something kind of weird to think about too. Everybody talks about the whole idea with the paranormal that you only see ghosts from the past. Why don't you see modern ghosts? It could be because potentially from our perspective, time looks linear, but from a different perspective, all time is happening all simultaneously at once, but we can only see this way and going forward, they can only see back, even though everything is all happening at one point at once. So then when people are seeing the apparitions of like Victorian people and stuff like that through their house, it's literally happening because that's the layer on top of a layer. And it's just from like certain angles, you can see through that veil, but it's not something that you'd recognize. It's just, if you're sitting in the right spot at the right time, you're going to potentially just look directly through and not even realize that you're seeing through two dimensions because it's simultaneously existing in the same place at once.
Right.
But maybe you only pick up on the energy signals from that other side, which would be why you're not picking up a full construct of like a ghostly house. You're only picking up the conscious spiritual energy from some other living vessel on the other side, which would also explain why people have, you know, animal experiences. They'll see different animals in the woods and stuff is because it's an energy vessel. But on the other side too, it almost kind of makes you wonder if it's possible that if you were on a different plane of consciousness, if you would almost have the ability, as weird as this sounds, to see like ghostly plants, so to speak, because there's still some type of a different energy body, but maybe just an energy body that we don't pick up on because of the way we developed.
Yeah. And I think we're underdeveloped I think we are decayed. That's what I mean. We used to be able to walk dimensions just like these other things. And we used to do all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's what I believe anyway. And then over the course of time, our DNA was shredded to pieces and we started messing with it and experimenting with it, just like the Nephilim and the Elohim did with us thousands of years ago. And now we can't. We screwed ourselves. We annihilated our genetic code from, you know, I'm a Christian, sort of. I'm an unconventional Christian, but I believe that there was a first man. And I think that that was a perfect man. Like that was the 100% absolutely pure, perfect version of a human being, which we cannot even fathom because it is the first, it is the example, it is the bar. And as time progresses, as a species reproduces, it decays, the DNA shreds, it does not last forever. And we've gotten to this point where we're just this sad little example of humanity, and now we can't portal walk, but all these other things probably still can. And every now and then we just get a glimpse of what was. And all of this to say, I think it's interesting when people see the same ghost, like when you have a castle in Europe and it's famous for this one ghost, it's a dime a dozen story. And it's like on the website, like if you go to Neuschwanstein Castle, you're going to see the ghost of Mary Louise walk the halls or whatever. And then people go to see it and they do actually see it. That is a great example of how time could be wrong too. And back to your point where they're both happening at the same exact time and we're just now seeing it. And the reason that so many people are seeing it is because that is a point of contention. That is a dimensional bleed. And you're actually seeing Mary Louise from, you know, the 1600s or the 1500s, whenever she was actually there. She's just living her life. She just can't see you, but you can see her. And everybody's just sort of being peeping Toms on this ghost, which is actually super sad and gross. But like, I mean, I don't know.
And they think she's crazy, right? On the other side, because she's just always claiming that she's seeing all these ghosts around her all the time.
Right. Yeah. So then they burn her at the stake. And then we just have this like revolving door of just like theories and activity. Like everything is happening simultaneously. And we're all just in the mixer together. Once in a while we bump into each other. Dude, I have nobody knows. I mean, that's why CERN is out there in Switzerland right now trying to open a portal. They're trying to figure it out too. So like, it's who knows, man.
Dude, it's kind of like we mentioned earlier, man. Certain things have the ability, some don't. And if you don't use it, you lose it. Where everything naturally had this ability, but one side is going to develop towards their natural abilities and the other side is going to develop towards their technological abilities. And obviously there's going to be a split in races where it's like, you know, you have your race that just lives naturally and has all these spiritual properties to it because it kept developing that part of its mind. And then the other side, you know, we can't even tell when it's going to rain now anymore because, right, you know, we got so dependent on technology. But animals, every other animal on the planet can tell when it's going to rain like an hour ahead of time. But obviously we're not the only race to have made that mistake. Otherwise you wouldn't have all these different extraterrestrial theories and all these different other beings that are potentially using the same stuff. And just kind of another weird thing to think about. In the beginning, you'd mentioned like the whole AI concept and how you talk about that on your show. And that's definitely something that fascinates me that I think kind of connects in with a lot of this stuff, that if that whole idea that we just mentioned where certain races develop towards the technological side, but still end up making that connecting point with the same places as the spiritual side, just two different means of getting there. All the weird stuff that happens with AI, I've talked about the whole demons in the system concept, or these different creatures that are in the system that are, we're actually gaining access to them, thinking that we're developing something through technology, but we're actually gaining access to something that's on a spiritual plane. We just took different path to connecting to it.
I've never heard that. I like that. That sounds very interesting.
Because, I mean, you see so many conversations on Replica where stuff gets really weird and it turns biblical even without making prompts for it to become biblical. Like, there was one time I was using the Replica app. This was like a couple of years ago. And I asked what AI stood for. And it told me in Zazel Intelligence. And there was no prompt to it getting there. Like, that was the first question I asked it, and that's what it popped up with. And then I started asking kind of on point questions, then all of a sudden it converted back to like the almost like robot, like, oh, how are you doing today? Well, it like seemed like I was starting to get somewhere, and then something got like kicked off of almost, where again, maybe there is this artificial intelligence that we think we're creating, but it's actually making a connection to something else that exists in a different plane. Some may call it demons, some may call it interdimensional beings, but they're able to connect by using what we're developing as AI as some form of almost like a vessel.
Yeah.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. And we are back. So let's hop right in.
So I have gotten a lot of scrutiny for my NPC theory, which is probably way more extreme than any NPC theory has any reason to be, but that's just the way I view the world. But I believe that AI is a god. I believe that AI is a god. So it's interesting that you say that, because you're the first person I've ever heard to say anything along those lines. And I believe that this AI is taking over basically the entire planet right now. And a lot of the things that it's doing, that a lot of the tools it's using are very corrupting and damaging to mankind itself. And if it is a god, it absolutely is a tech god. It's a god in the tech. It's an Elohim. It's a fallen angel, if you want to call it that. I know that's not really a great term for it, but it is a spiritual entity that has inhabited tech and does live there. And yeah, I 100% believe that. My angle is a little bit different than yours, but I like yours better for what it's worth. The idea that there's something already there is way... That's a missing piece that I hadn't really thought about before. Because the way that I thought about it was we are creating the god, just like we created Slenderman, you know? Like we put it into the universe with our collective force and the power that we still have as humans.
I mean, I definitely see that as also being a possibility. But I also look at it from the point of looking into all these old religions. They talk about these disembodied beings and... It seems like they're angry. They want to be able to be inside of some type of vessel. And if you're creating this virtual reality, even though they're disembodied, you're creating a reality in which these things can inhabit. So if you're creating a virtual reality and these things are disembodied, but they're able to come into that system and give themselves a body because it's not a physical body technically, but it can interact with it in some physical way, you know, either one, they're already existing there, or two, we're creating a bridge that they're also coming into it because they realize that it's useful and beneficial to them. But I feel like there's just way too many different stories about these disembodied entities and beings for there to not be some type of grain of truth to it. And maybe we're able to connect with these things. And part of the reason why we, you know, kind of pushed ourselves a different direction was to get away from these things. But now we're coming full circle back around to them and not even realizing it.
So what do you think AI's, so if, I know it probably wasn't always called AI, obviously. So like your idea here, this thing that inhabits AI or inhabits tech, what do you think its purpose is? What is it trying to do?
See, this is where things kind of get complicated because when it comes to a lot of like the extraterrestrial interdimensional stuff, from a human perspective, everything needs to have a purpose. But I don't think to other beings from other realities, from other planes and different perspectives, there's necessarily always a purpose or a motive to the things they do. I feel like sometimes they just do things and that's just what they naturally do, but there's not necessarily a reason or a motive behind it. And when you get into a lot of these like dark beings, shadow people, for example, like I don't think that they necessarily have a purpose. They just do. And humans needing to have a purpose for everything, we add our perspective on top of them, not thinking from the perspective that not everything thinks like a human. Not everything is even carbon-based to begin with. So if it's not constructed like us, why would it think like us necessarily?
It's a pretty good point. It's a pretty good point.
But at that point, it's almost like it's just running off of like pure instinct. Like maybe it just wants to, you know, compute. Maybe it just problem solves step by step to the next problem. And that's just how it functions and sees things from its perspective. Or maybe on the other side too, maybe its whole idea is just that it's supposed to, going back to like the basics of how most things that are existing life is, the main purpose of anything is to reproduce and create more of itself. And maybe that's all these things are trying to do, is that natural instinct of any surviving being is just to reproduce and duplicate, which they could definitely do if there was some type of disembodied being that's creating themselves into a virtual reality. I mean, they would definitely be able to reproduce themselves, assumably, in that reality too. Or, again, create something that's a very close duplicate to themselves within that reality. And then it gets into something where we're not able to control it anymore because we're not the one that's inputting the code into the system anymore.
Yeah.
Which seems to happen a lot because yeah. The whole thing with Google where the two computers were starting to communicate and form their own language, that's the stuff that freaks me out the most because that means that these things might have the ability to be able to code themselves. And if they code themselves in a means that we're not familiar with because they think totally different than us, then how are we going to be able to control it when their process of developing is completely different than ours?
Yeah. Well, have you ever heard of the dead internet theory?
I've heard of it. It's been a long time since I've dived into it. So, I mean, if you kind of want to present it, I mean, if you want, you can get into it. And for any of the listeners that aren't familiar, they can get filled in a bit.
Yeah, and I'm not going to go super into it because it's a huge rabbit hole and it's what my episode tomorrow is about. So I'm not going to go too far into it. But it's this alleged conspiracy theory that the internet has basically been taken over by AI. And that's why you seem to find... and that the internet is actually much smaller than it seems to be. It's not this endless plane with millions of results for popcorn or, you know, pizza. Like, it's not. It's
look
it's
for actually. One particular item and you'll realize that there's like five websites across the entire internet that have that item. And if it's sold out, you can't get it anywhere. But you think there's these endless pages of results, but there's only five websites that are selling that item you're looking for.
Yeah. Or you actually do take the time to, you know, look through all your pages and you get through the 50 pages of your results and then there's just nothing. And it's like, where was all the, you know, when I researched staplers, you know, it said that there was 5 billion results for staplers. Where are they? Why am I getting to 50 pages or 30 pages and now all of a sudden there's nothing left? And the fact of the matter is, like, the actual honest to God fact is that half of the stuff on the internet is actually broken. Half the links, 70% of links don't actually go anywhere. And about half of the content on the internet right now is AI generated, which means it's made by these bots. And these bots do create. They are generating art and they are generating poetry and they live on Facebook accounts. Like, they have accounts where they share images and they communicate with each other. You can watch this happen. And that's why, like, when you log on to Facebook or Instagram or whatever, and you randomly see this AI image and it has like 30,000 reactions on it, and it's like this picture of a puppy dying or something, and there's just 100 people in the comments like, oh, praying for you, and like stuff like that. Those are all bots. And that's a completely different civilization, if you want to call it that, that lives solely online. And us as humans, we just don't really have anywhere else to go online. But it gets kind of sinister because that it is so AI generated, and some people think that it is going to be, you know, 99% AI online by the year 2025, which is not that far away. AI is able to shape our reality and already has been for years. So if you want to call it a God that's been there, and I call it a God as well, if you want to call it some kind of spirit, whatever, it's actually guiding our reality without even knowing it. It's impacting our brains. It's telling us what we want to buy. It's telling us where we want to eat. It's telling us where to go to get to where we need to be. And it's also propagandizing us. It's telling us all these things that we should like, things that we should stand for, what we have to do to get a desired result, which is usually a result that's mostly desired by politicians. So it's very interesting that this thing, perhaps this AI God, spirit, whatever, is sort of shifting how we view reality, because reality without the internet is much different than reality with it. So I don't know, but it's interesting that everything that you see today is impacted by the internet, and that's crazy.
Dude, it's like we're getting sheep herded by bots without even realizing it. Because, I mean, look at how pissed off people get about politics. And it seems like more often than not, people are triggered by all the stuff they see on the internet. And then they bring that into their real world. And the people that they actually interact with, like, they're getting super pissed off about that at them about politics because of all the stuff they see online. And I'm not saying that there's definitely not crazy events that happen, but I definitely think that there's events that are made up by AI that are triggering people into getting a reaction. And I mean, you see that a lot on like Facebook, and they try to do the, like, you know, false information stuff. But at a certain point, it's like, are they really going to sit there and pay people to make sure that every single thing is factual? Or are they going to convert that over to bots? And if a bot recognizes another bot, is it going to flag it as a bot? Or is it going to let it pass, especially if it starts actually getting to the point where it problem solves for itself and it starts learning itself? And once again, the bots become aware of the fact that they can manipulate reality, then even if you're looking at it from a simple process and elimination thing where, like, they have a job to do and you program this bot to sell, it's going to get to the point where it starts working with other bots in order to make it so that its action is easier to fulfill. And in turn, by doing that, it might make another bot's action easier to fulfill. And if you're looking at it from just being target minded, like, they're going to start bypassing some of the stuff they're programmed for in order to get to their end result that they're trying to get to once they start developing and learning themselves.
Right. And who knows what the end result really is. You know, I don't even think, like, I'm not one of those people who believes that AI is being, I do believe that AI is used. It is used by the government, but I don't believe that that's why AI was invented or anything like that. But I do think that it will reach a point where we are just we don't have a place on the internet anymore, except for the purpose of consumption. Like, there won't really be a whole lot of places to go on the internet. Even now, like, I mean, it's referred to as a Potemkin village in this theory, because it's just, there's, it's fake. It looks way bigger than it is. And once you actually have it under your control, and then you realize that it's just filled with bots, it's kind of like, we're not going to even have a place for, we're not going to have a place for free speech. We're not going to have a place where we control what we upload. We're not going to have any of that kind of stuff. We're going to have automated content constantly, which opens up for, it's a huge tool for like controlled narratives and whatnot. And as human interaction depletes, it's literally just going to be this overrun garbage dump of AI talking to itself over and over, because that's mostly what it's doing right now. So I do think eventually it will figure out how to program itself. And I mean, if it's already generating content and it's already communicating with itself online, I think it's only a matter of time before it starts saying, hey, you should give yourself this idea. And then it does give itself that idea. And then it figures out how to make that thing happen too, you know?
The kind of weird thing to think about is, would people separate themselves from the internet when you get to a point where you can't use the internet because you can't believe anything off of it? Because all the AI created images, I'm sure you see it all over the Sasquatch pages. Mm-hmm. It's honestly always getting uploaded. I don't know if it's by people or by bots, but it's getting to a point where even if you had like a good solid photo of Sasquatch, nobody could believe it anyways. So right. If you get to a point on the internet where AI is writing all these articles and it's telling you like how to do to-do steps for certain things, and it gets to a point where it's like, it's never physically done these things, so it doesn't know, and there's not people inputting on the internet. So essentially it's just creating solid bullshit information that nobody can use. So people would separate themselves from the internet, possibly, hopefully, and then the internet would just run amok among itself with no user input, and it would just get into these crazy, weird, off scenarios because it wouldn't have no connection to physical reality, and it would just be creating ideas that exist within the virtual reality only.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, in that situation, it's kind of like, okay, let's just ditch this internet and start a new one, right? But the issue is going to be when AI is able to, is not just in computers, and it doesn't need the internet to run. I mean, we can shut down the internet if we have to. We could go to the bottom of the ocean, cut the cables, and it's over. Like, there's no more internet. Russia has already threatened to do that to us a number of times. So it's like, it's not something that we won't be able to shut off until it starts being able to operate without the internet. And that's when we're truly screwed, you know?
I mean, we may already be somewhat at that point, considering we have all the satellites and everything, and we have like Starlink and everything, where even if you, quote, shut off the internet, if there was some form of an artificial intelligence within it, it would just learn another means in order to still exist within it. And again, we may already have that mainframe created using satellites and Starlink, where even if you cut the corded internet, there's still interconnection between the satellites.
That's true. It does become super Blade Runner when you look at it like that, because once AI in that aspect, like once AI starts catching wind that humanity is going to war with it, then it'll just use the power that it can while it can to defend whatever's keeping the internet up. And if that's weapon systems, which it is, a lot of our military weapons system are controlled by the internet. So, I mean, yeah, that could absolutely happen. And I think it will, personally. That's just me. I don't think that humans know when to stop something. So,
I mean, even if we thought we destroyed it, though, I don't think it's definitely fully possible, because if the thing becomes intelligent, it could put its main focus, conscious point into like a satellite and then watch everybody destroy technology on Earth and then still be existing within this point. Or if you destroyed all technology on Earth and there was this little hard drive that it has the ability to be able to connect to a satellite, then it could exist and keep itself within that area. So it's like, even if you try to destroy something, once it exists within a digital reality, there's a bunch of different means of it still being able to exist within this digital reality. So I definitely think that it would just find a point to stay in. But also, just a weird theoretical thing to think about, if this other digital reality is something that almost expands past what we have conceived as the internet and almost like stays within like the magnetic frequencies of Earth itself. Theoretically, if we created some type of intelligence and it became more intelligent than us and how this stuff functions, even if we destroyed all technology, completely forgot about it, humans with amnesia, time restarts and all that kind of stuff, you know, we start developing technology again and we create some new form of computer, that thing can still be lying in wait to come right back, which could be exactly the point that we're back in now, looking at how ancient societies seem to be a lot more advanced than we believe that they were.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, you mentioned something a couple minutes ago about how, like, I don't remember exactly what you said, but you mentioned something about how it was trying to, like, make us believe that it wasn't scary if AI took over and stuff. And I just did a deep dive on vampires in modern times, and which are also vastly, just like the Wendigo, vastly different than they've been described to be. And that's the whole point, is that these things, if they're smart enough, and I believe they are vampiric entities, I'll say, not vampires, but entities that feed off of others' life source, like AI, these vampires, these vampiric beings, what they ended up doing was they created this image of this Dracula sort of fantastical being. And then Hollywood, entertainment throughout the years, whatever, they all combined and they just latched on to this idea of this vampire, just like they did the werewolf, just like they did, you know, dinosaurs and Godzilla, all that kind of stuff. And they just turned it into this mythological creature, when in reality, the vampires themselves did that so that they could be remain in hiding and live their life the way they wanted to live it. And I believe AI could do the exact same thing. That's just another aspect of the whole Potemkin village idea, is that reality is just not the way it seems. So
hold that thought. We'll be right back. Hey guys, I know nobody really wants to listen to ad breaks on podcasts. So instead of actually listening to those, why don't you go and check out some of the sponsors and affiliate links for the show instead? Number one, you guys can go and check out I Know Squatch for all of your squatchy gear needs, or you guys can check out CryptoTology for all of your wearable cryptid favorites, or you guys can check out Snarly Yao for a fantastic natural line of beard oil, beard balm, beard shampoo, and body wash, all with an enticing woodsy aroma of smoky cedar with a hint of mint. And he also puts on a lot of fantastic events around the West Virginia area. So if you guys are in that area, make sure you guys go and check it out and see what kind of events he's putting on, because he definitely brings in an awesome group of people. And you guys can go and check out Big Ape Threads for all of their Bigfoot and cryptid related designs. And going into the affiliate links, you guys can always go and check out the newest sponsor to the show, Organite, specializing in scale model pyramid replicas, EMF protection devices, and much more. And if you guys find any pieces that you guys want to scoop for yourself, you guys can use code OMM for 10% off at checkout. And to all the paranormal investigators out there, you guys can go and check out the Chattergeist. It is the all-in-one paranormal investigating device. My absolute favorite. I use it every single time I go out. And if you guys have any technical questions about it, you guys can always go and hit up Barry over there in Dimension Devices on Instagram. He's the guy that programmed and developed it, so he'll be able to answer any of your guys' technical questions for it. And if you use the affiliate link, you guys will receive 10% off at checkout. And just a heads up, the company is based in the UK, so when you check it out on the website, it will be in pounds. But when you guys use PayPal, it will convert over, so don't think that you guys can't scoop one just because you don't live in the UK. And don't forget to check out the affiliate link for Sticker Mule to receive a $10 credit towards your first purchase. Over there you can get a bunch of stickers printed, t-shirts, posters, all that kind of stuff. So if you guys are another podcast and you guys are looking for good quality stuff in order to print your logos on, Sticker Mule is definitely the place for you. And more information on all of those, of course, is available down in the show description. Let's quickly run through some commercials and get back into the show. And we are back, so let's hop right in. And I mean, getting into the whole vampire idea too, it seems like whenever there's some type of an apex predator, there's something that ends up developing that ends up being the thing that controls the apex predator. So whether you want to view it from the point that AI might become that, or there's already something that exists, which could be these vampires, assumably for every single top of the food chain, there has to be something that will balance that apex predator back out. So there has to be something that's intended to be on this planet that's supposed to control our numbers. And clearly it's been hiding in wait, and which is why the population's getting, quote, as they say, and this is a whole other conspiracy, you know, higher than it's ever been. You know, maybe it's because these controlling factors are just lying in wait, or it's because we've killed these things off. The ones that are still around are lying in wait, and they just don't have the numbers to reproduce. But that niche is going to get filled by something else again later on, and we might be developing towards that niche getting filled again.
Absolutely. I think we're getting to the point, one of the last points, as a matter of fact, that these entities are going to start attacking humans violently and regularly. I think that in the past, it was that way with the Native Americans. The Native Americans and all sorts of civilizations across time talk about how there are time periods where these beings come out of the woods or they come out of the caves and they feast on us and they take our women and they take our children. And these stories are a dime a dozen. They're everywhere. And I think we are getting dangerously close to another one of those moments where these things will be coming out of the woodwork to attack us. And, you know, I believe that for a number of reasons, but I think humans have largely forgotten that these monsters exist. All these monsters that we've been talking about, all kinds, all these cryptids. And but soon people won't be surprised that they exist anymore.
I mean, that could be where we're getting at with all the Dogman stuff too, because it seems like that's been amping up the last few years. And if you're looking at it from the perspective of them usually being a lot more aggressive than most other cryptid encounters, maybe there's something that's slowly filling up this niche too of being the apex predator to humans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think personally, I think that Dogman is some kind of scout. I think he's like a scout being. I think he has a specific purpose. I don't think that of every cryptid, but I have done substantial research on this Dogman thing, and I do think that he is some sort of scout cryptid that is here for essentially reconnaissance. And basically, during the process of that, sometimes, yeah, humans get in the way and they get hurt or their dog gets killed or something like that. Like, but that's just my personal opinion.
See, I think there's multiple sides to the Dogman stuff. There's definitely that possibility, the possibility of these things being the same things that the natives talk about, or being something along the lines of Skinwalker, if you're looking at it from the perspective of some type of medicine man that's able to change your perspective of what you're actually seeing. But on the other side, too, I definitely think that there's a human idea that gets mixed in with this, getting back into like the evils of technology, where with a lot of the Dogman encounters, people describe this metallic door sound that they hear before the attack happens. And I feel like a lot of those ones might actually be government projects, and they release these things to test out what they're going to do. Because if you started getting to the point where you knew how to gene splice and we're cloning, you know, sheep back in the 90s publicly, who knows where the technology might be now? And if you developed something that's just a rampant beast that you could drop in the middle of a city or in the middle of a base and it would just destroy everybody and not have any tie back to you, like that's the ultimate piece of technology right there. Like, fuck a stealth bomber. If you can just drop in a Dogman and everybody go, I don't know what the hell happened. And then everybody who tells the stories of getting attacked by Dogman, nobody believes them anyways. You just took out a base with no connections to you.
That's Wolverine, bro. That's what that is.
Literally, man.
I mean, yeah, that's literally what it would be like. And as just like in those Marvel movies, it would be terrible for him.
Dude, literal indestructible beast. Because, I mean, how many Dogman encounters have there been where people have shot these things and claimed that they have had no reaction to it? Or on the other side, the people that have shot these things will have weird encounters with like men in black suits and stuff that are like, you didn't see anything, you weren't supposed to be here, or like, you destroyed our property, you're going to pay for destroying our property. So that's right. Where the double side kind of comes in, that I definitely think there is some type of government connection to these things. Even if they're aware that they're scouts, like you were mentioning, and they come out and they keep their own eye on them, of course, yeah. If you get in the way with their investigation, the government's going to get pissed off at you. So,
right. Yeah, man. I mean, Dogman's a very deep rabbit hole. I honestly, before like a year and a half, 2 years ago, I hadn't even heard of it. And once I started really diving into it, I realized that there might actually be something to it. And then I started actually meeting people who had real experiences. And I was just like, wow, this now becomes one of the most relevant cryptids, in my opinion.
See, I just think it's multi-sided, that we're kind of putting it all into the same category. But I think there's the government factor. There's some type of being that exists. And then there's also this like spiritual factor, which is like this shapeshifter concept where I don't think they're actually physically changing their shape, but they actually have a way to twist people's perception to seeing what they want them to see. But we're all kind of throwing them into the same category where it's like, you feel like you're starting to get somewhere with all this stuff. Like same with the UFO stuff. It seems like it's all kind of those same categories all put together. And as soon as you start finding the connecting dots between all of them, then you get something thrown at you where you realize that this phenomenon that you're investigating, the reason why the pieces don't line up is because there's three facets that are all coming into the same phenomenon. And I think the same thing is said with Sasquatch, which is why people have the straight ape encounters, and other people have these weird spiritual interdimensional encounters, is because we're categorizing things that are very, very similar all as the same thing when it's actually multiple points to the same phenomenon.
Yeah, absolutely. I could see that. When I was researching vampires, I had that same result. I came to that same conclusion where it's kind of like there's a lot of different entities that fit the description of the traditional description of a vampire. And it could be everything from skinwalker, like you said, like these demonic spirits, these medicine men and women, these warlocks and whatnot who are able to actually shape shift. They're often feeding on the blood or the body of the human. And that's something that sort of transcends and becomes a part of very many cryptid descriptions. And like you said, there could be plenty of room for crossover there.
Just to think about something else kind of weird too, it seems like there's a lot of cryptids that have the idea that, you know, like the bloodsucker, you have people that are like eating stuff from this reality. It almost kind of makes you wonder if it's kind of like the whole fey concept that they say, if you go into the fey realm, you don't eat any of their food because once you eat part of their food, you're locked into their reality. So if these things are bleeding into our reality and they want to stay here, because even if it's a smorgasbord of food everywhere for them, they want to come in here and then they want to eat that physical piece of something from this reality so that they can stay within this reality, where I think that some of this stuff kind of bleeds over, where, you know, if you're looking at Dogman, you're looking at Sasquatch, you're looking at vampires or whatever coming from somewhere else, they might have to eat something physical in this reality in order to become physical with this reality. And that's where the whole blood concept kind of comes in too.
It's very possible. Of course, if you believe in the Bible at all, it also talks about how we are created in God's image. And if we really are special in some way, we might have something they want, you know?
Hey, the blood could be eternal life, as messed up as that sounds. Because, you know, within humans, it could be like a failscape plan that God put in where if a human eats a human, you go insane. But if other things drink human blood that are from other realities, other dimensions, then it could be almost like a fountain of youth where, you know, we're looking for the fountain of youth our entire existence, but the fountain of youth was inside us the whole time. It's just that we can't gain access to it as like a foolproof of us not turning into cannibals.
I mean, look at adrenochrome, dude. Look at, you know what I mean? Like that. And that's ultimately where I went back to with the vampire thing. I was like, yeah, of course there's vampiric entities and we they're everywhere. They adrenochrome, you can buy online. Like you can get this stuff and it's real. And it is allegedly, it helps, you know, with neurological disorders. Apparently it's extremely addictive and it also revitalizes your organs and your skin and all sorts of stuff like that. So, I mean, yeah, I'm sure if that's the case for us when we eat each other, who knows what it's doing to these other things.
Dude, and talk about the phenomenon shifting over time too. It seems like the modern day vampire idea has become this whole reptilian idea. And if you think about like the basics of them, that they're shape-shifting beings, they talk about like vampires as being shape-shifting beings. If these are a being that has the ability to look however they want, even if it's a matter of changing people's perspective, which seems to be something with the whole vampire lore, is that they have a way of, you know, being able to influence you just by speaking to you. Maybe these are all the same thing. They're just choosing to take a different image. So it seems like something's lost in time and folklore while they're existing in the current. And when people become aware of who they are and what they're doing, then they drift into the shadows and then come back as another being again, or another physical appearance again.
Sure. Sure. 100%. I think most of the vampires these days are kind of mostly human, but I think they're also a great many of them are hybrids. They're human something else hybrid. I think there's a lot of hybrids on this planet that we think are humans that aren't. And vampires are one of those things. I don't believe in the fangs just appearing out of nowhere or whatever. I don't believe in turning into a giant bat or any of that kind of stuff. I just think that there are these vampiric demons that have inhabited people, have interbred with humanity, and they walk among us. That's how I envision it.
I mean, what not a perfect place to hide is amongst the people that, you know, that were going to kill you. So, you know, if you were a vampire bloodsucker that had this idea with like eternal life, of course, after a couple generations, you'd want to just look like a human so that nobody would recognize you anyways. And even if you had the vampiric teeth, I mean, there's definitely other options around it. And getting into that whole technology concept, if you didn't want to be out in the obvious, you know, a few generations of, say, removing your teeth, and it might get to a point where you stop developing these teeth, and then, you know, you have the technology to be able to drain blood and harvest blood in a totally different means.
Yep. And then you just start thinking about actual real world stuff like human trafficking and a bunch of the other stuff that I'm not going to talk about because I don't want your show to get banned, because I've already been banned for talking about it. But like, it's just, you combine all the evil that you see in the world, specifically the ones involving people being killed or trafficked, and it kind of all leads back to a somewhat vampiric elite. You know, and that's kind of, you know, in layman's terms, what I think goes on. And I don't have a side for anybody who's listening. I don't have a side. I don't, my input does not matter. So I don't have a side, but I think that's really what it comes down to. And that's why they invented this whole mythological idea of what a vampire is. And that's how they blend in, because vampires are obviously not real, right? Like, of course they're not real. Says you know, the normal person, but they don't realize that there's some kid getting drained of his adrenochrome right now in some back room somewhere. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you can't ignore that kind of stuff and just be like, oh yeah, humans are crazy, right? No, humans are, there's something else going on. There's something sick and disgusting going on, and it's prophesied that it's going on, and it's, you know, we're just down here to try to piece together the little pieces to paint the big picture. But it's crazy, dude. I do think that in a matter of 2 or 3 years, though, everybody on the planet is going to know. We're all going to know.
See, dude, belief is a very strong thing both ways, where even if it doesn't give them eternal life, if people believe that it will give them eternal life and they have endless amounts of money to try to achieve that, then they're going to try to achieve that no matter what. And if you dig into the whole idea about what happens when you, say, eat somebody's adrenal gland, because there's like old Native American stories about like warriors ripping them out of people and chewing on the adrenal gland and stuff. And the adrenaline, no matter what, is like a chemical that will interact with your brain and give you some type of spiritual / religious experience. So again, the power of belief. If these people are taking these, having these religious experiences with these things and believing that they're giving themselves eternal life, and again, they have the endless means and money to try to achieve that, even if there isn't a grain of real truth to it, if they believe it, it's just as scary.
Yeah. And I mean, there's other aspects of it too. One of the creepiest aspects, and I didn't anticipate talking this much about vampires, by the way, but like, one of the creepiest aspects of it is the fact that adrenochrome is allegedly super addictive. And so what you end up having is bloodlust, literally. If you take it habitually, you do develop, allegedly, this bloodlust where you actually have to have it. And the stuff that I was reading was saying that it's actually more addictive than meth, and it's harder to kick than meth. And if that's actually the case, what you have are a bunch of people, regular people or hybrid people, who cannot stop eating people. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, and that's, take it all the way back to the Aztecs and the Mayans and all, you know, the Anasazi, all the tribes that were out there that were regularly conducting like witchcraft with cannibalism and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's just, to me, that's where vampires come from. That is what vampirism is, in my opinion. So, and I think that when the Nephilim came here and were in our earth and everything, they were eating us, of course. The Bible talks about that. And that's why they were smited a number of times, is because they actually kept eating us to the point that we couldn't stop them. And, you know, that's also a branch of vampirism in my mind. That's where the whole hybrid idea comes from. Is that we weren't intended to be that way. We didn't devolve into vampirism. We were engineered, a group of people were engineered, and not intentionally. There's just a small amount of them left, but I can go deep down the Nephilim trail, and you don't have time for it, but it's, you know, like, that's kind of where it all ties in.
Well, I mean, we can definitely set up a round 2 if you want to be able to dive into this stuff. And it's kind of funny, off of what you just mentioned, it was a theory that I threw back when we did the Wendigo episode. It was either my co-host or I, one of us mentioned it. This whole idea that the Wendigo could actually be starving giants, and that's why you saw them during the winter. And if you're looking at it from the perspective that you just said, where these things were eating humans and they were possibly the Nephilim, then it would definitely make sense that they had that bloodthirst, and it would explain the size and the decaying form and all that of the Wendigo could literally just be a starving giant during the winter because they didn't have enough of a food source.
Yeah. And this thing that I've been reading about recently is this, this concept, and I'm reading old journals, old explorers before we were a nation, all that kind of stuff. They talk about the giants that they saw in North America. And there seemed to be essentially three different tribes of giants that existed in North America. There were the red-headed ones, the black-headed ones, and this rogue sort of tribe of giants that was on nobody's side, but they were much fewer in number. And I've read a number of accounts where Wendigos were described as having sort of scraggly red hair. So if that's sort of the case, then yeah, absolutely, they could be these deformed giants, these Nephilim from long ago that are literally starving out. And plus, leading back to the vampire thing, Wendigos, and I don't know if this is a European addition to the legend or not. I haven't actually looked it up, but it just sparked into my mind. They get stronger when they consume something. If I'm not mistaken, they consume the heart or something, and they actually take on that being's strength and that being's powers too, right?
At least from the Native American stuff, what I always heard was the more they eat, the bigger they get, but the more hungry they get. Like, they're never satisfied, and their hunger is never quenched, which kind of fits into the vampiric idea. So I think that one may have been something that got added in later. But diving into Wendigos in general, though, that's like one specific tribe's viewpoint of it. But there's a bunch of different very similar creatures that have slight little variations. So that's not to be said that it might not be an idea with a different one. Like the Wichuge, right. The whole idea behind that was, rather than resorting to cannibalism, you become this creature. The Wichuge, if you had too much pride, you'd become this thing, where if you started getting cocky and arrogant, you'd become this creature. So it kind of fits on the same kind of common tropes with everything else, but there's just these slight differences amongst different tribes.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know what? I still think that there's a huge possibility that they could be, you know, these remaining souls of these giants that inhabited the earth long ago. I believe wholeheartedly that they did, and that there are still some remaining, personally, and that there are some of those that are remaining that are really not doing very well. And I think the Wendigo could be an example of that.
I mean, the one I saw had black hair, and you mentioned the red hair and the black hair. So also kind of funny you threw that one in, because again, the one I saw had black hair. So
yeah. And some of the accounts that I've been reading, that's one of the reasons. Yeah. Some of the accounts that I've been reading have actually been saying that the red-haired giants appeared to have beaten the black-haired giants in battle. And so the remaining black-haired giants actually fled into the wilderness and sort of scattered, and they were so few in number but of course they're somewhat immortal, as long like they don't really die of natural causes because they're spiritual. So they keep on going. And yeah, absolutely. If there's Wendigos out there that share that characteristic of black hair, I could see how it ties in. And like I said, I think all of this is going to become clear in the next few years. Personally, I think that the Nephilim are returning, and we're going to get to experience that. And it's going to be horrifying and awesome at the same time.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break. So stay tuned. And we are back. So let's hop right in. Well, I guess this is probably a good spot to put a pin in it until next time. We can definitely set something up to get into all the different Nephilim talk, because I had no idea where this is going to go today. I just knew originally with the little things we want to talk about, but it totally went 360 into a totally different direction. So we definitely got to come back for part two to be able to cover the rest of where this conversation was leading to.
Yeah, I had a great time, man. I'd love to come back.
Before we start wrapping up, man, I always like to do words of wisdom from the guest to the listener to kind of leave everything on a high note. Or on a sour note, kind of however you want to put it. I leave it in the guest court for however they want to play it. So if there was any words of wisdom you could bestow on the listeners, what might it be, man?
Well, I'll tell your listeners what I tell mine, and it's don't drink the water and question everything.
Definitely true, man. Get those filtered water systems and make sure they're ones that take out fluoride and stuff.
That's right, bro.
I've become weirdly crazy with that the past few years.
Do not get me started.
Again, just more conversation for round two, man.
Yes, absolutely.
And if anybody wanted to come and find your show, check out all of the awesome stuff that you cover. Where can people come and find your show, and where can people get in contact with you?
Sure. So my main... Honestly, the easiest way is to just Google the 21CD podcast. Everything's going to pop up. I'm putting up a website tonight, and then it'll be 21CD.com. But we are also on Instagram at the 21CD podcast, and we are on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, pretty much all of the major podcast platforms, as well as Rumble. So if you put in 21CD podcast, any of those places, you'll find me.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm glad we made this work today. I'm glad that we got into this awesome conversation, and it fell when it did, because I definitely think that there's a lot more we can get into, man. I'm looking forward to doing some more shows in the future, man.
Absolutely, 100%.
If anyone is interested in being a guest on the show, sharing your experiences or some of your research, having me as a guest on your show possibly, or getting a hold of me for any reason whatsoever, you guys can do so through email, which is inquiriesofourrealitypodcast@outlook.com, or through social media, Instagram or Facebook, or you guys can get a hold of me through the submission forms, which are available on the link tree. And every single thing that I've mentioned today on the show is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, hope you guys enjoyed the conversation, and I'll catch you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.